So when you did retire from the game, Phil, did you remain involved in rugby at all?
Not really, no. Rugby had been part of my life for so long. It was nice not to have to be committed, really. And I did a little bit of coaching occasionally, odd sessions here and there. And then I got involved in coaching at Cotswold Lectonians. But again, it wasn't coaching, it was more like organisation, really. Because most of them were all self-employed farmers or builders and everything else, so big, powerful forwards. But they used to take the ball so far forward. I watched them play and I said, well, I can do something with this lot. And then outside half played for New Zealand, who was a good little player. Played from New Zealand, not for New Zealand. And he was a good player. And they had a big, huge winger, Paul Radbourne, who was never going to be a winger. He just wasn't elusive enough. But we put him in the front row, loose end. Give him one or two lessons, went out, they never lost a game. And we used to play him. I said, well, you organise him, just do this. And they said, what do you want to do with the scrum house in charge of you lot? When he smacks your ass, you give him the ball. Right? You give him the ball. I don't care, you give him the ball. Because you used to go trundle down the field, collapse, stop, boom, then scrum. I said, no, when you're going forward, they want the ball. And so I said, you decide what you wanted. And he used to give the scrum half, bang, out to him. And then he'd play the old rugby league move. Either give it to the big guy or not. But of course, they give the big guy, they wouldn't expect this guy to be able to do the even time of the 100. And off he'd take. And he scored try after try after try. And we had a cup game up at Kidderminster, I forget, and there was a ball loose in the halfway line. We went back, picked it up, we took off, we scored a try. Everyone wanted him. And I don't think they lost the 42 games. But it was great fun. It was a real rugby club. Everybody had a job in the club. There's like two flood-lit pitches on all the way to the training area. If you go down there, you don't see any chimney pots. They just came to come in from everywhere. The only time they ever fell out, England played Wales. Half a club of Welsh, half a club of English. There was a line down the middle of the room. And game over, that's it, back again. That was it. But it was great fun, it really was. And that was the only sort of coaching. Well, it wasn't coaching, it was just organisation, really. Mm. It really was probably one of the best small rugby clubs I've ever been involved with. It's nice to see rugby clubs are still existing like that, which is quite hard this day and age.
Yeah.
This day and age. But no, I never really got involved in coaching. I go to the gym and I train for myself. Some lads turn up, they train, and everything else. But I think sometimes some expect all the easy answers. It doesn't come. It's only one way you're going to success, necessarily by sheer hard work. No other way. Well, I don't know the other way. There probably is, but I suppose I'm old school, if you like, in that respect. Train hard. Train harder than the next man. And eventually, if you're good enough and big enough, you'll beat him.
Yeah.
You'll wear him out. And if you train on your weak points and go from there. But, you know, the game today has moved on. And it's, I think, you know, Gloucester are some fantastic players, haven't they? They really have. And, you know, testament to themselves, really. But their careers are very short. And they'll move on. I remember Peter Ford saying to me, it's your club while you're here, but it's somebody else's before you and be somebody else's after you.
Mm.
And I think that's so true. You live your today, you know, if that's your period in history, you don't live before it and you don't live after it.
Yeah.
And there's the men, you know, and that's why I think the history of the club is so important. What you're doing, it's great, not from my point of view. I just think of the great men that have gone before me and the stories. I remember going and seeing the boards on the wall, all these players, fantastic players, all sadly no longer here. I remember meeting the great Digger Morris, and he was a character and a half.
Yeah.
He really was a character and a half. You know, he had a face that made anyone good look, and they see Digger's face. And his son Roy played in the Don Player Cup, you know, another, and everything else was on. And then Peter's son, I remember Paul playing fullback, you know, and somebody in the crowd, oh, not bloody good as his father. I said, well, his father was a flank forward and he's a fullback, you know. I remember Steve Baker when we were in the John Player Cup and we were going to draw with Moseley, and the only one they'd be drawn ever. They'd never be drawn again, well, they'd play sudden death, you know.
Yeah.
And he had a penalty kick to draw it. And Steve Baker said, I hope he kicks it for his sake. Not for the club's sake, not for our sake, for his sake.
Yeah.
And I thought that was in the heat of the moment, he talked about remembering people and so on. I remember that. Because what he felt for him as a player, he'd suffered a lot of abuse by people because he'd taken the great Peter Butler's place.
Yeah.
But like every playing career, it comes to an end. No matter who you are, what you are, you know, you aren't going to go on forever. And he'd taken Peter Butler's place, and people had gone on and given him a hard time, Paul. And he kicked that goal, and we drew the game. And so earlier in the year, we trounced Moseley. Actually hammered him up there. Hammered him. Same players. And they came out, different attitude. That was it. Yeah. So, no, I never got involved much in the coaching.
Do you think you would have preferred to play in the professional era?
I don't know. I wouldn't have minded. It would have been great fun to do it and see just where you would have measured up to, really. Mm. I suppose that sort of thing is that the old vanity and personal pride bit. But you only can play whatever you're given. And I played in my era, and I was a reasonable player in my era. And some of these guys, you know, this is their time now. You know, there's a great player who's unfortunately broken his arm for Gloucester, Greg Somerville. Now, that's a player 60-odd times for the All Blacks. That's a pretty fair achievement, because they don't pick many dum-dums there. And he did the honour of turning up at Gloucester and playing for them. And I bet, you know, he gives everything he gets every time he goes out. Mm. But, you know, his international career is over, and everything else and so on. And, you know, he must have great memories as well of the time he played. And you think of the All Blacks players going back, you know, way back when I remember watching on King's Home. I remember watching when Keith Murdoch was playing for them, you know, the infamous Keith Murdoch on King's Home. And seeing those great All Black players then. And then some of the great Australians that came forward. And there was, you know, some fantastic South Africans and everything else. And some great Irish prop forwards of yesteryear, you know, Ray McLaughlin, Sean Lynch. Sean Lynch playing the 71 Lions tour when they were successful. Nobody's ever, many people don't talk about Sean Lynch. He played that tour and never played again.
Mm.
He went to New Zealand and won in New Zealand. And, you know, the mighty Mass McLaughlin from Scotland. And there's so many players who have produced over the years. I think, you know, this French side look pretty useful too, don't they? Their front row. And Scotland's produced one or two. I think all nations have in a period of time. I think it's great. I love the eras. I love the time. Yeah. I think you see your time in history is from then to then. You don't live before, you don't live after it. And I think I'd best look from today. I remember my era, if you got, you know, a pair of boots, you're doing well. Well, now you get them sort of hand over fist, you'd be 25 pairs. I remember Adidas were the sponsors, and we used to get the kit there and everything else and so on. I remember when I finished, I went to the club, and I laid it all at the table, and it was like a load of locusts, it all disappeared. And Ian Smith, bless his cotton socks, he was on his way up, he was a young player then, and Dick's lad, 35 caps for Scotland. And he had this wetsuit, it was like sort of hanging on him and everything else. So I'm giving him a new one by Nike, you know, a free wetsuit for nothing.
Yeah.
And it didn't fit me anyway, but I thought, I got two here because he gave me a spare one. So we're in the university, he came to the changing room, I ripped it off him, seeing the look on his face, I ripped his wetsuit, said, you've got to try that one. And I gave him the. And then I'm certain he has got so much free kit from Scotland, he's given it on to somebody else. And that's, you know, see him, he had a fantastic career, didn't he?
Yeah. He did. In fact, we very recently interviewed Dick Smith, and Ian had helped him collect together some memorabilia to show us, and it was interesting to note in there were postcards from Mickey Burton when he was playing out in Australia and so on.
Yeah.
Back to Ian, you know, in his youth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it must have been wonderful for him to...
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, I remember sharing a room with Burton in Australia. Sat up in bed because of the jet lag, but he, you know, sort of, it's like, you know, couldn't sleep at night, and couldn't get out of bed the next day.
Definitely. Well, you probably saw him writing these postcards.
They weren't very long words.
No, they weren't.